supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Common Space, a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY. I'm your host, Jamie J. Around the holidays, there's always one consistent thing for Nina McKissick. The people she works with will have to make the difficult choice to live or to die. You see, Nina's a hospice nurse. She's also the author of the book From Sun to Sun, Stories of 21 Patients Facing Death. And on this episode of Common Space, associate producer Allie L'Esperance speaks with Nina about working with patients in their most vulnerable moments, in what is supposed to be the most joyful time of the year.
What was the first year that you worked in hospice, like around the holidays?
The one I recall is when I had to go out, and I had 4 visits that day, and it was quite chaotic because there were a lot of people trying to stay on this planet.
So for a lot of people, they have pretty big expectations for how the holidays are going to go, and I don't think one of them involves a family member or even themselves mm-hmm. passing away. Do you find that the patients that you work with and their families are different around the holidays when they come in versus any other time during the year?
Oh, yeah. It seems as though around early November, when you have a hospice patient, and if you've admitted them and gotten to know them for a little bit amount of time, that you can discuss this with them, and they will make a choice. The dying will make a choice whether to leave or try to hang in there and stay alive through the holidays. And then it's tough on the hospice team because, you know, taking care of someone who's really, truly trying to hang in there can be a challenge.
What's challenging about it?
Everybody thinks it's so sad. There's moments of sadness, and our culture is very weird. I travel a lot around the world, and I try to pop into hospices to see how they care for their dying. And we have this thing where, you know, you go to a party, what do? I'm a nurse. Well, what kind of nurse? And I say, oh, here we go, hospice. And they go, oh, I must be so sad, or else they just walk away. It's just so, we're so strange in this country. So, I think the hardest part is when you're taking care of someone. For me, it's that heart-opening beauty. I mean, it's not hard. It's just I have become an expert at, you know, waterproof makeup. I mean, it's just the beauty. And then after you're with a patient and a family many times, then you have to go assimilate back into the real world again. And you just want to tell people, please, just stop. I mean, the madness that we, and the smoke and mirrors that we believe in this country especially, is just madness. And there's so much in the end-of-life experience, the dying experience, that really where you learn how to live. And there are teachers. So no matter, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's unique. No one's a mirror of another person. And so the uniqueness and in the gentleness and in the, there's hilarious events. It's where you truly are alive.
So a few years ago, actually 7 years ago, at a First Person Art Story Slam, you told a story of a man named Eric, who you wrote about in your book as well. Can you tell me about your experience with Eric?
Well, he was 51 years old, and he was a former federal agent. And I think he came up the ranks of the Army. But he was a really lovely man. He had Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, and he had the familial version of it, which his father had it too. So when we got Eric, he was pretty prepared. He knew that he had to get a lot of help in there and the correct help. But his wife, she was a wreck. She had no, she kind of had no nurturing instincts, and she was always yelling at him, you know, stop curling your toes, stop, you know, open your mouth. And so it was torture for me to watch this. And he would just give me the look, sort of like, you know, she's real fun to live with. So anyway, we have this silent communication here. And then I got a caregiver in there. And Shay, you know, she's just wonderful. And We always kidded around. You know, she's atypical looking, and you know, she's tattooed all over her face and pierced purple nose ring, and she's the most wonderful, compassionate, hardworking, dedicated, you know, nurse aide that I know. And so after Eric's wife, you know, she accepted Shay, and Shay sat, you know, dragged a mattress and slept next to Eric. Eric was in a hospital bed. It was just glorious watching those two together. They were interacting on this really high level of kindness and humor, and she made him laugh, and she was always like, she was like an Italian mother. She was always like grabbing his cheeks and, you know, just like, you're so, you know, you're just so wonderful. And then one night, Shay called me in the middle of the night and said, "Hey, McKissick, get over here. I need your help." So I said, "What? You know, what's up?" She says, "Just get over here." So I went over, and she was exhausted. Eric was really very sick. And then I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Everything I did, you could have done." She goes, and she takes me out to the deck that he had built. And she goes, "That's what I have you here for." And she pointed to this giant moon. It was just one of those giant moons, full moons. She said, "Eric has to see that. He really loves them." And I said, "Well, okay." We hadn't been out in days. And it's a big task to get somebody out of bed who's so delicate. So, you know, I just said, "Hey, well, here I am. Here's my hands are free. Give me, you know, whatever you want me to do." So anyway, we got Eric out there and we sat there and, you know, he looked like a pile of clean laundry. We had him, we had just tons of blankets on him, and just his little face was just looking up at the moon. And we just thought, like, are we the luckiest people on this earth right now? And then we got him back to bed, and Eric had us walk really slowly down the hallway and to see the pictures of his family and his parents. And then he, like a wonderful soldier, he got him into bed, he gave it the nod, and then with a couple of days, he had died. So, you know, so many of my patients, especially the patients with Lou Gehrig's disease, they have courage that I would take any highly decorated combat veteran with lots of decorations, and they would have nothing on my ALS patients. So the courage that they exhibit when their body is really betraying them. But Eric was a special case, and I wanted to share that, how holidays can be so different. It was during the holidays, too, so that happened. So, yeah. But he taught me so much. Every time I see a full moon, I blow it a kiss, and I know that nothing is impossible as far as when you're caring for someone.
It seemed like a pretty special ending for him and for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Shay being there, one of the last things he did, he mouthed the words, "I love you," to her, and she just, you know, she just loved him back, so it was great. Yeah.
When I first heard you tell the story, you said that if anyone has the opportunity to watch someone watch something for the last time in their life, then you have to take it. Oh, yeah. Because it's amazing. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think serving the dying has taught me to not take for granted a lot of things. And that's where the frustration comes in, I think, for all of us who serve the dying. Like, you know, someone will say, "Oh, my God, you know, I'm 15 pounds overweight." And you'll say, "Hey, you know, someday you won't be." And a lot of it is just, it teaches us that a lot of this is a crapshoot. There's seeds of beauty in every family. Every family is complicated. Every individual is unique, and that if we don't pay more attention on planning our, you know, if we get the luxury, I'm saying luxury, I know it's, you're going to, everybody's going to freak out when they hear that, but of having a few weeks to say goodbye to your beloveds, then, you know, it's you learn, we learn, so there are teachers, boy, oh boy, it's very reverent, very sacred.
So, do you find, because I know it's not as easy as, well, actually, I don't know if it's as easy mm-hmm. as when you're in hospice, like, okay, today's like the choice. Do you decide to live or do you decide to die? But if it is that simplistic, do you find that around the holiday season, people decide to go more one way or the other?
Oh, definitely. And the conversation that we have alone with the patient is many times very different than the one we have with our caregivers and their loved ones. But we love getting people when they can have that discussion. And yes, they hunker down to do the hard work of dying. And of course, we have all the layers of religion and tradition and, oh, just, you know, everything comes out in the family. Wherever someone has put their attention in their life is where this all comes out at the end. So we have figured that out earlier, like the social workers especially have figured out where the delicacy and vulnerability in the family and the caregivers is. And then we work with that. We get down to, especially some patients will say, okay, where do you want me to do this? And I'll say, okay, let me run around and look at your house. And they're very matter of fact, but that's where they've been their entire life. So you get to know the personalities first, and you know how they approach a big problem. Whatever way you approach a giant disaster you've had in your life, like divorce, just losing a family member, you're just losing your dog, your cat, is the way you're going to probably respond to your untimely death. So some people just say, I don't want to know anything about it. Just, call me when it's over kind of thing. And some people like a lot of data. Some people just take charge. It's your style. It's your personal style.
Do you think around the holidays where you work in hospice, it is because there are more families around the holiday, it's a little bit more lively or joyful? Or do you find that it tends to be more lonely?
Oh, it's all of those things. It depends on where they put their attention. Families are complicated. And look at holidays anyway. A lot of people are just, the holidays, the leaves start turning and they're either effervescent or they're get little melancholy. There's an emotional response. And also people are tired. They're confused. They don't know what to think. They're having the first time maybe they're feeling ridiculous things like guilt or shame, you know, those silly emotions. And a lot of times we try to bring out the beauty in it, and we will acknowledge people, but it all depends on how they live their life. And sometimes it's very funny. We really have very humorous, playful exits for people, because that's the way they ran their life. They was always like sarcastic and, you know, laughing and wanting people around and doing things you know, just their style. It's the style.
Can you give me an example of a hilarious or joyful exit that you've experienced?
This one, for some reason, because since I'm Puerto Rican and Italian, they gave me the ethnic patients. So I had this really little old Italian man, and he had his hospital bed in the middle of his split-level den, and his wife kept wanting me to marry his son, and I hadn't even met him. She was like, we got to get Anthony. It was all this whole thing, which was really funny, and so I hadn't met him, and then the priest comes. It was like 3 weeks later, and then the priest comes, and he's a young priest, and he's standing at the foot of the bed, and I'm standing next to this dying man. And then we hear the door slam, and we're in the middle of the last rites or sacrament of the sick. We hear the door slam, people, heavy footed going up the stairs. And this guy runs and jumps on top of his father. And the one older brother, who's always ever suffering and serious, goes, "Meet Anthony." And I started laughing, and the priest started laughing. And so I said, everybody, I see Anthony's here. I'm going to give you some time alone. Then we'll start this whole last rites thing over again. So the priest and I went outside. It was like 2:30 in the morning, and we started laughing. I fell into the bushes. I had like juniper berries on me. And then we were just dying laughing. And then Peter walks outside to have a cigarette, and he says, "Hey, Nina, what do you think of Anthony?" And I was like, "Great guy." He said, "Hey, we can do a wedding and a funeral at the same time." So, just all this crazy, there's so many things that happen that are really funny. Some people want to have they'll tell you that, "Will you have a clown nose on me when I die?" Or, "Will you have this when I die?" Or I'll say, a lot of people are just so funny and they plan beforehand. And we do meet with them and say, "Is there anything special when you're unable to make decisions? What we can do for you to make your passing the way you want it?" And some people, they want you to keep them covered, never put hospital gowns on them, never put diapers on them. And we say, "Hey, you've got it," And sometimes they give you this list when you're just writing like crazy, like, "Okay, here we go." So, you try to make it theirs. And sometimes you even have a more tender conversation of what, you know, who do you want here? Who don't you want here? What if that person arrives? What can we do for you? We are your advocates. I'm a lioness. What can I do? So when we have the luxury of having people coming onto hospice program earlier and, hey, everybody, you can graduate from it and be discharged, that we can do those personalized things. And it is quite, it is just absolutely wonderful. So it's nice to give them that gift. And afterwards, the family, they're so exhausted. And then after we see them in 6 months, we see these people who have had rest, and now they're, you know, they're getting on with their life a little bit more. It's just lovely. But we do try to customize it because everyone's so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very nice to hear.
Oh, yeah. I had a woman who had, her dog had just had tons of puppies. Two dogs had puppies. And so I put those puppies on top of her, and they were jumping around. They were chewing on my stethoscope when I was examining her, and they were just, it was the cutest things. But she lived for her puppies, and it was so sweet having these sweet little things. And it was pure chaos, but it was just the way she wanted it. So it's none of my business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to talk about from your book?
Yes, in my book, From Son to Son, it's without religiosity. It's 21 stories of all different types of patients that I took care of. And I want everyone to lighten up on themselves. I mean, really, we're all different. We all, and believe it or not, you're gonna be leaving this planet. You're going to be dying. So why not start planning little things now? I mean, it's a real gift to your family to put a little page on your phone. This is what I want if I croak early or something. And, you know, the songs you want or something, or a poem you want or a picture you want. And it's a gift. I mean, when someone's going to have a baby, they don't stop all of a sudden at the end of their childbirth classes and say, no, I'm not going to give birth to this thing. It's not a thank you very much. So give that gift to your family. Plan this. Talk about it. Be light. So what if someone cries? So what if someone thinks it's bad luck. My goodness gracious. And watch what you say to people when you don't know what to say. If you start using these phrases like God only gives you what you can handle and stay strong, buddy, and keep fighting, that's kind of rude and inconsiderate. When you don't know what to say to someone, say that. Say, I don't know what to say to you. All I know that my heart is breaking. All right? So if you take away anything, just realize everyone's an individual. Watch what you say and stop and learn from everyone. Yeah. The dying are our teachers.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, Nina.
You are most welcome. Thank you.
That was Nina McKissick, a hospice nurse and author of From Son to Son, with Common Space Associate Producer Allie L'Esperance, reminding us how precious life is during the holidays. I'm your host, Jamie J., and you've been listening to Common Space. Common Space has been supported by the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage. Common Space is produced by Mike Villers. Our interim executive producer is Naomi Starobin. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer. Our engineer has been Charlie Kyer. I'm your host, Jamie J., producer and co-writer of Common Space. And please, if you haven't already, subscribe to Common Space on iTunes or Stitcher. And while you're at it, give us a rating. Thanks so much for listening.